Just a moment. Just a moment.
Welcome to the Future Law Podcast, exploring where the law has been.
Hey Siri, take a selfie.
And where it's going.
Oh, good afternoon.
From the brilliant.
My name is Sophia, and I am the latest and greatest robot.
To the scary.
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
And everything in between. Please welcome your very real and very human host, Mike Madison.
As longtime Future Law Podcast listeners know, sometimes I invoke the host's privilege of interviewing friends, colleagues, and former students who are leading law into the future in one way or another, and sometimes in many ways. My guest today is just one of those people, Ivan Fong, who has served as the lead lawyer at the 3M company in Minneapolis, Minnesota since 2012. Today, he is 3M's Executive Vice President, Chief Legal and Policy Officer, and Secretary. Earlier in 2021, his team was recognized by the American Lawyer magazine with its Best Legal Department and Legal Department of the Year award. Ivan and I have known each other since the early 1980s, when we started law school together. Since we graduated, Ivan has had a diverse career as a law clerk at the Supreme Court of the United States, as a lawyer in private practice with a leading Washington, D.C. law firm, with the United States Department of Justice, in senior in-house positions at General Electric and Cardinal Health, Inc., and from 2009 to 2012 as General Counsel of the United States Department of Homeland Security. I started our conversation by asking Ivan not about his current role at 3M, but instead about his prior position at Homeland Security. Looking thoughtfully into the future of law often means looking thoughtfully at the past. Ivan Fong, it's great to reconnect. Welcome to the Future Law Podcast.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to see you and hear your voice. And it's been a long time. Looking forward to this conversation.
It has been a long time, and you've been a very, very busy lawyer in those decades. I wanted to start us off by reflecting quickly on something that you and I talked about the other day as we were preparing for this conversation. From 2009 to 2012, before you came to 3M, you were general counsel of the Department of Homeland Security. And since the theme of this podcast is future law and the future of law, we were talking about how as law students back in the 1980s, you literally couldn't imagine that part of your future because the Department of Homeland Security did not exist. So I wanted to ask you to talk a bit about what that signifies to you, what that implies in terms of how law school does poorly and does well in terms of preparing people for careers, and how you might think about those equations today.
Well, Mike, you're exactly right. When I graduated, when you and I graduated from law school 30 plus years ago, there was no such thing as the Department of Homeland Security. And so I think what I take away is that, you know, rapid and constant change is the order of the day. We have to think that there are going to be jobs, there are going to be things, there are going to be ways of doing things that don't exist. And so planning is fraught because we just can't see that far ahead. And so to me, this capability or skill, if you want to call it, of being, you know, a constant learner, of being adaptable, and of being able to look around corners is an undervalued or underinvested skill that, you know, it's hard to teach those things. It's more of a mindset, but I think it's something that I have learned as I've reflected on the variety of things I've done. So as you know, I've just been so fortunate to have been, you know, a law clerk to two federal judges. I've been in private practice with a large law firm. I've been in government service. Now I'm general counsel at 3M, one of the top technology companies in the world. And so I've had so many different experiences that I would say there was no, you know, one law school class or one thing that I've learned. I've had to learn from many people all along the way.
So let me interrupt you there and take us down a notch or two in terms of specificity, because what I'm hearing you say, I've heard many people in different sectors of the professional world talk about similar things, but I wanted to ask you to get into a little bit of the details. Out of law school, you went in clerk for federal judges, private practice, you were at the Justice Department for a time, into the private sector, then back to public service, and now at 3M for almost a decade. That couldn't have been planned. It wasn't all serendipity, but I'm wondering if you could talk in bits and pieces about some of the specifics of how you saw opportunities and made decisions to move from one role to the next. How did you put yourself in the position to take advantage of unplanned opportunities?
Well, you're exactly right. Although none of it was planned, I had, I think, a general idea of what I wanted to do, and the specifics will take hours over a beer, but maybe I'll share one or two of the turning point stories. You know, I have always known that I've wanted to do public service, and that's in part because of the way I was raised. I come from an immigrant family. My parents immigrated to the United States with very little. This country has been very good to them, to my sister and me. And I've always felt a debt of gratitude that we've had opportunities to really build, you know, the American dream here. And so when I had the opportunity to go to the Department of Justice, to be a law clerk, to go to Homeland Security, that was one tangible way that I felt I could give back to this country in a small way. You know, those opportunities didn't really come because I had planned on them at the time. In fact, my story about going to the Department of Justice, I had recently become a partner at the law firm I was at and had promised my wife that I would stay at the law firm because we were still relatively, you know, starting out in our careers. This was back in the day before the stratospheric sort of salaries in law firms. And I had to tell her, sorry, I'm not going to be able to complete my commitment to you because of this opportunity, which arose because of a law school alum who had been nominated to be the number three person at the Department of Justice. And I had met him in an interview several years earlier when I was coming out of my clerkship. And we had the usual 30-minute conversation. And for whatever reason, he remembered me, and I, of course, remembered him. And he called one day and said, "Do you want to have breakfast?" And that's what led to the job at the Department of Justice. And it was a great job, and I've been so fortunate to have had those kinds of opportunities. You know, going in-house was also not something that I think was on my radar screen. I think most law students think about private practice or maybe government service, maybe public interest. And again, I was all set to go back to my law firm after being at the Department of Justice because I owed my wife a few more years when just by accident, I ran into somebody who was at GE, and Jack Welch was the CEO and wanted to transform GE into an internet company. This was the time of the dot-com threat to the large manufacturing and industrial companies. And so the general counsel of GE said, "Well, we need an e-commerce privacy cybersecurity lawyer." And when I was at the Department of Justice, I was able to combine my background and interest in technology and the law into doing some policy work on the internet and e-commerce. And that got the attention of the GE general counsel. And so I went up and interviewed with him, and he persuaded me that being in-house and helping craft policy for a company like GE was really the best place for me to be a lawyer. And I have not looked back. I've been in-house basically ever since, because being close to clients, being at the cutting edge of what the technology companies are doing, I think is a great way to experience in real time technological and other changes that are occurring all around us.
One really compelling part of that little history is that one critical component of it is something that you had to develop yourself, the instinct that meeting one person in one context might at least subconsciously lead to opportunities, conversations, personal or professional down the road. So that's something that a lot of us experience over an extended period of time in personal lives or professional lives, but it's a skill, and it's not a skill that classical legal education encourages or teaches. Some people have those kinds of opportunities when they're in school. Many people don't. Some people recognize it as an explicit skill as they get more experienced. Some people don't. And I just wanted to ask you if you at any point sort of realized that we'll call it the people skill or the social skill that you're relying on, which is a simple label for a complicated domain, if you realized at any particular point that was part of your toolkit as a lawyer, that was an explicit part of your trajectory and success?
I would say yes and no. I do not view it in an instrumentalist way. And by that, I mean, I'm not meeting people because I think maybe they can be helpful to me later, even if, in fact, if you look at the trajectory of my career, that's been a theme. Rather, I look at it the other way around. I look at meeting people as finding ways for me to be helpful to them. And I think it's a significant change or difference. I once read a quote, I don't know who said it, every person you meet is a window into another world. And so I think it's important. I agree it's a skill to get comfortable meeting other people, meeting strangers. I'm not one to strike up a conversation with the person next to me on the airplane, for example. I know people who do that. I don't. But if I'm at a reception or at a dinner, a professional association dinner, I will try to get to know the people who are at my table. I clearly have an interest in getting to know the people around me at work or in my neighborhood. And it's true, you never know, you know, the people you meet, somehow life has funny ways of coming around. And so I just try to keep an open mind. I try to be friendly. I have a genuine interest in other people. And as I said, I try to find ways that I can connect them to other people or ideas. And maybe that's a better word than, I don't remember what you used, the people skills. I do think it's important to be a connector, because if I was on the phone just yesterday with somebody who was thinking about joining a for-profit board, and I said, well, I just last week got an email from a recruiter looking for a new board member, and you know, I'm not interested. I have a friend who was interested, but he turned it down. But this other guy, I mean, maybe he would be interested. And so I said, I'll forward to you the name of the recruiter, and who knows, just connecting people is a small thing that I can do, and that's just something I enjoy doing.
So let me pick up on the other element of your anecdote about your moving from the Justice Department to GE. And I heard it also in your description of 3M as one of the world's leading technology companies. I think a lot of people still think of 3M as the company that sells us Scotch tape and Post-its. But the thing I wanted to draw out is that the role of technology itself and the role of technology and changing technology in the world at large, which everybody knows, but specifically in the context of your career and your experiences. And I'm going to highlight something that you may or may not remember. I didn't mention this to you when we talked earlier on, but I remember that when we were students at Stanford, you did a research project, very early investigation into artificial intelligence and law with a partner at a global law firm at the time. And so there's an interesting continuity at a thematic level between your very, very early interest in intersections between law and technology, although in the mid-1980s, what we thought of as artificial intelligence was very, very different than what it's become. And I wondered if you could talk a bit about subject matter expertise and how you've observed changes in the intersection between law and technology, how that affects how you think about the world, how it has affected your career, and especially what you imagine the trajectory to be going forward, given your deep history with the topic.
Yeah, I remember that research project and article well, and you do have a good memory. At the time, you had a great interest in law and technology as well. As I recall, we were all part of a core group that started a new student organization, the Stanford Law and Technology Association, which I believe still exists to this
day. I think it does still exist.
One of the most exciting things about practicing law is to think about and address creatively the legal issues posed by new technology, whether it's artificial intelligence or automation and data analytics, new business models that are disrupting the way we currently either practice law or buy and sell things, autonomous vehicles, the list goes on. And each of those areas, whether cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, blockchain, I mean, there are a ton of legal and policy questions that bright minds need to think about. So I think it's an endless source of interesting both intellectual and practical challenges. And so you asked earlier about my career. I do think about sort of the arc of my career, even though I've done a lot of different things, the theme has been issues at the intersection of law and science and technology and policy. And so I chose to go to the Department of Homeland Security in part because of the threat that cyber terrorists and others posed to our country. I went to 3M in part because of the rich portfolio of technologies. We have, you know, tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of patents. We are in healthcare. We are in safety and respiratory protection as we come out of the pandemic. We make optical films for mobile and other devices. We're in semiconductor manufacturing and data centers, electric vehicles. I mean, any new technology, 3M probably has some part in. And so I think if that's something you're interested in, the good news is I don't think you have to be a technologist. I think you can learn it and establish yourself as an expert if you invest the time and energy to learn the technology and then think about how to apply existing legal principles and doctrine into the new technology that we are now experiencing.
You've been in different in-house roles now for, we'll say, roughly 20 years, starting with GE and Cardinal Health and Homeland Security and now 3M. How have changes in the intersection of law and technology affected how you manage your function, how you supervise lawyers, rely on technology tools, AI, analytics, other things? What does the day-to-day look like today that's different than it looked like for somebody in your role 20 years ago?
I'm not sure I can answer the day-to-day, but as I think back over the course of, you know, my career, I would say that the things that I value or the things that I find myself doing, one of them is to being more of a strategic partner, to be an advisor and a counselor that views issues through the lens of the law and being a lawyer, but I'm really acting in a broader capacity than just being the lawyer. Secondly, I think to your earlier point, being able to think expansively about the future, to anticipate or to look around corners, I think is a skill that I had not really appreciated. It's so important in today's environment where the risks and the complexity of those risks have multiplied, whether it's compliance risk or reputational risk, ESG now pressures are top of mind. So this ability to sort of have your crystal ball and to have a network of people who can help you think through where the world is going. Third is this ability to be a good leader, to be a people person, to articulate a mission and a purpose for the team, and then to collaborate and align on a strategy, and then to execute on that strategy through the team, not through individual accomplishment. And then finally, as you said, keeping up with the evolving technology, the way we practice law, you know, at the time we graduated from law school, word processing on a computer was a relatively new thing, which is a scary subject for, or a scary thought for people coming out of law school now who just can't imagine that there was a room full of people who all they did was type documents from things that you might dictate or write on a legal pad.
My students can't imagine a world before email. And have to explain, I took my law school exams on a manual typewriter.
So these four things, right, is SALT, you know, being a strategic partner, being able to look around corners, having leadership skills and people skills, and then, you know, leveraging the technology, SALT, is the way I think about sort of the foundation is still being a lawyer, being the best lawyer you can be, and understanding legal principles and doctrine. Those evolve too, but those you have to keep up with and can change. But adding those other softer elements to me has been critical.
I like the SALT acronym. I like how you've tried to sort of wrap your instincts into a model or a system that people can keep track of. And you mentioned ESG, which in the corporate world, make sure I understand this accurately for the benefit of the podcast audience, environmental, social, and governance.
Correct.
From the standpoint of the firm's participation in the world, not just in its own markets. Can you give us an example or two from maybe your recent experience of how these macro themes, the SALT cluster of competencies and ideas, and sort of the general organizational demands of your role as the senior legal person at 3M, some anecdotes or examples of how this has come down to cases, how you've experienced, especially over the last year and a half, like during the pandemic, an exceptionally stressful time for leaders and everybody working in organizations all over the world. Have there been particular moments where you've had to deploy these instincts in a nimble, agile way to combine legal instincts, strategic instincts, anticipatory instincts, collaborative instincts, not only to protect 3M, but also to advance broader interests in the world?
Well, one story that comes to mind was in April of last year, 2020, sort of right when the lockdowns were occurring and the demand for our N95 respirators was off the charts. We couldn't make enough to meet the demand. And while we were ramping up quite substantially, the president sent a tweet basically saying that 3M was a bad company and would have a price to pay, partly because we had commitments to export some of the respirators we were making here in the US to Canada and our friends and neighbors in Mexico and Latin America. That was a Thursday, as I recall. On Friday, we issued a statement and had our CEO explain that we not only had contractual commitments, but that from a trade policy perspective, it would be short-sighted to cut off our exports, because that would invite retaliation by our trade partners in Canada, Mexico, and Latin America. They would cut off our need for essential supplies, and we're all worse off. That helped a little bit. It was a big pushback, but the president was not satisfied. And so over the weekend, I called some of my contacts at the Department of Homeland Security. We worked together as a team internally within our legal department and essentially came up with an arrangement, an agreement, whereby we could continue to sell up to a point outside the U.S. And we made it clear we would devote and increase the number of respirators that we would supply into the U.S., particularly into our frontline healthcare and other first responders, while at the same time importing from our manufacturing facilities in Asia to the U.S. so as to shift some of the global distribution from, at the time, Asia was going through their peak, you may recall, and to convince them, and this was the hard part of the negotiation, to give some of their or product that was made there to serve the U.S. demand. And that took quite a bit of international diplomacy, as well as just heavy lifting nights, all night drafting of an agreement. And by Monday's press conference, the president was praising 3M for being a great company and being terrific to work with. So that was sort of a 72-hour experience that was crisis management, which is another skill that I have found very helpful, as well as, you know, showing that we are a responsible company, that, you know, I think the core of being an ESG company, investors, customers, employees now look for companies to be models for sustainability, for diversity and equity, as well as for good corporate governance, to be a responsible corporate citizen. You know, we could easily have either ignored it or just done whatever we wanted, but I'm a believer in partnerships. You know, public-private partnerships are the way to go, whether it's fighting a pandemic or cybersecurity or many other very difficult challenges that we face as a country and as a world.
Let's close this conversation by taking that cluster of themes. And I really appreciate the interesting and challenging anecdote about managing Twitter-based critiques in the middle of a pandemic. Turn this to the emerging generation of law students and newer lawyers. And they are training and preparing to enter a profession that is undergoing as much transformation from various perspectives as any generation in our memory that's coming into the profession. If you were to take the next couple of minutes as an opportunity to give some concrete advice to that younger, newer cohort, not only coming through elite law schools, but coming through law programs and law faculties and law departments all over the world. At any, maybe these are folks who are intending to become law firm private practitioners, maybe going into government service, or maybe just opening small practices in smaller towns or working for nonprofits in service-oriented ambitions at a smaller scale. What's your sort of generic 2-minute spiel as to how they should best position themselves to succeed in a very challenging and uncertain future?
So I'll start with something we talked about at the beginning of the podcast, which is the importance of being adaptable to managing the change and to embracing the change, because the world will change in so many unpredictable ways over the course of your careers. I think it's important to keep your eyes wide open to the changes that are occurring and to be receptive to the idea of doing something different, new or unplanned. When I was in law school, I heard some great advice, which I'll paraphrase. The advice was the secret to success is to work hard and take calculated risks. So being open to opportunities outside of your comfort zone. And to that, I would add a third piece of advice, which is stay true to your values. My story about having the opportunity and ultimately going into government service was about my belief in giving back. And so I think that's an important third element. I would also say, don't always feel that you have to have your life planned out. I know when I talk to law students, they feel there's so much pressure to know exactly what they want to do. And I tell them, don't worry about it. I hate the interview question, you know, what do you see yourself doing in 5 years? Because if anybody had asked me that question, if I had given the honest answer, I'd say, I don't know. But whatever answer I would have given would have been wrong, because I had opportunities come my way and I was willing to take a leap of faith. And I think that's another piece of advice, which is, you know, you can be risk averse and just be where you are, or you can take baby steps and learn about other things that other people are doing. And one of these days, maybe you'll have a chance to, you know, pursue one of those opportunities. And don't be afraid to pursue not so much your passion, although passion is important, but your vocation, your calling, right? Find out what it is that the world needs and how you can apply the gifts that you have to fill that urgent need that the world is calling you to do.
So Ivan, I think we're going to call it right there, because that's, I think, a brilliant conclusion to kind of sum up your career and your guidance, which I really appreciate. And it resonates very much with me in my own career, and it's consistent with a lot of the things I share with my students as well. So thank you for that. And thank you for your time. It's been great to have this conversation. Great to see you. I know that on the podcast people can't, but I can while we're recording. So that's a lot of fun. And maybe at some point down the road, we'll check in again and see how you're doing at 3M or whatever happens in the future.
Thank you, Mike, for this opportunity. I love the topic, future law, future of law. It's an endless source of great stimulation and conversation. And I really appreciate your thinking of me. And again, it's been a pleasure and a privilege as well. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Future Law Podcast. For links to the articles mentioned and to contact the hosts, visit futurelawpodcast.com.